Hey, welcome to the Eve edition of The Unpresentable Parts. Hosts Samantha Neptune and Jasmine Cherry kickstart the dialogue where silence ends. Every episode dives into the experiences that define us as women, celebrating our diversity, depth, and dynamism. With Samantha and Jasmine, your voice matters. Ready to be a part of the conversation? Let's get started.
And welcome to our Unpresentable Parts podcast, Eve edition. I am Sam Blake.
Hey, and I'm Jasmine Cherry.
Awesome. Well, we aim to make the unpresentable presentable. And so before we jump into our podcast, we will do our normal ritual or tradition, whatever you want to call it, and share what we find this week or today unpresentable about us, and to just really start off being vulnerable in that way and opening up that space for whoever is listening as well. So I'll begin. Okay. I think what is the unpresentable part for me is this constant. It's a constant for me. It's that I tend to carry anxiety with me no matter what. It's and I think this week and this past week I hadn't been feeling well, which added to my anxiety because there are things I needed to do that I didn't get done. So feeling behind on some things. And so I think the unpresentable thing for me is when that anxiety comes that I really haven't spent a lot of time in prayer. I haven't really taken my anxious thoughts and given them to God. And so I think that's it for me. It's coming into even here today, knowing, hey, Sam, you really didn't take the time to kind of get rid of some of this nervous energy, this anxious energy that you've been carrying for the last few days. So I think that's it for me.
Gotcha. Thanks, Sam. Actually, I will kind of ride on the back of that. For me, I do think I have definitely seen a difference in just my prayer life and my connection with God from last week, even to this week. And so I would say that would be, you know, maybe one of the unpresentable things, but just needing to make sure that I know that I need God. And I know sometimes when I'm probably too busy being in the driver's seat and trying to get things done that I can kind of forget about God, but making sure I'm involving him with everything, right? The Holy Spirit, just everything. I was thinking about that, like what is going on, what's happening. So I want to be more connected and just making sure God, practicing that presence of God, right? He's everywhere, he's here with me. So yeah,
thank you for sharing that, Jazz. And I think when we're connected with God, everything's right in the world. And when we're not, there's that, you know, just things seem a little off. It's not plugging in. So I just appreciate you sharing that. And for anyone who is feeling that, my thoughts for you and my hope for you is that you'll take some time to pray and connect with God so that really, honestly, things can feel right with the world again. Okay. So yeah. This is super exciting. We are actually going to start a 3-part series called Resilience, Voices in the Shadows, Resilience, Redemption, and Unconventional Faith. And so I am super excited because one of the things I love, love, love about doing this Unpresentable Parts Eve edition is we get to talk about women and women in the Bible. And today we are actually going to focus on Hagar. And the episode title is Unseen No More, Hagar's Journey of Redemption. Now, I don't know if you guys know much about Hagar, but really her story does resonate for me. And it resonates for anyone who's been through a lot. So if you've been through a lot, you can connect with this woman. I love how God gives us these characters in the Bible that we get to hear their journey, their life story, and it's not always perfect and it's not always pretty, and it's relatable. It's relatable. So here is this woman, Hagar. She was a foreigner, she was a slave, and she was mistreated. She is incredibly, and here's the cool thing about Hagar that I love this. She actually is an important figure in Judaism, in Christianity, and in Islam. This woman is in all three of those books, and in the Torah, in the of the Christian Bible, and that why can I not for the life of me remember
Quran.
the Quran? Thank you. And I just think, wow, this woman's life had major impact. It impacts so many different people in so many different walks of life and even different strands of religion. So she is super inspiring to me. And really her experiences resonates for many women who've survived abuse or struggling. And I love that about her character. It's so broad, it's so big, it's so relatable. And honestly, as a Black woman in America, it's relatable for me. I just, it is some of what I read about her, it's so hard. It's so hard, but it's so inspiring to see her go through that and the way she goes through it and just what God allows us to learn about her. So I'm particularly moved by her. So how familiar are you with Hagar?
Hagar, I feel like just in my journey, I do feel like Hagar wasn't talked about as much. She was, for sure, but I feel like there are not many, she was not necessarily a focal point of a lesson or focal point if we were in a Bible study, and let's kind of dive in deeper and get to know her and all the different angles. And what you said in the beginning, Sam, when you said she's a foreigner, she was a slave, she was mistreated, I'm like, is that not Black people in America? What? As soon as you said that, I said, oh my gosh, yes. So we can definitely understand even that layer today. But no, she was never at like a focal point. So, but I know the basic facts about her, but never kind of let's maybe dive in a little bit deeper, see even how she was feeling, you know, and kind of stepping into her shoes. I don't think that was, you know, just wasn't a thing, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, we hear a lot about many women in the Bible, but you're right. Hagar is not a focal point. We tend to focus on Abraham and Sarah. Don't really tend to focus on her as much. And here's this woman, here is Hagar. You know, just background wise, she has no power because, as we said, she was a slave. She was a foreigner. She has no power. But here's the cool thing about Hagar. She is actually the first person in scripture to be visited by an angel of God.
It's pretty cool.
How cool about that? And she's the only person in scripture to give God a name. That blows me away because from the very beginning, it shows the character of God, right? All through the Bible, God's character is he is for the foreigner. He is for the mistreated. He empowers women, you know. In a very patriarchal system, religiously, we've experienced the patriarchy a lot, and we tend to put on God that, oh, you know, we put this negativity on him when the truth of the matter is God has been a champion of women from the very beginning. And this story of Hagar really, it's super inspiring to see her, but to see God really, because it's really this whole story of Hagar shows us God's grace and God's love. It is believed, though, that Hagar was a gift to Abraham and Sarah when they were in Egypt. And if you are able to read, as you listen to this podcast, pull out your Bible and read Genesis 16, and you will get to understand or well get familiar with the story of Hagar a bit. It starts a lot there. But here there was this woman who was a gift. She was given to someone, as an inanimate object. You know, here's this human being given to someone. While I believe while they were in Egypt and as they were leaving, she was a gift giving, based on what is historically written. But I want to ask you a question. And this is really important because I asked another person this, and I've asked two people this, and it's very interesting the answer I get. When you, if you close your eyes for a second, what do you visualize, Hagar and Sarai, Sarah and Abraham? What do you visualize that they look like?
Good question. Do I visualize a look? That's a great question. I don't think, Sam, I've ever thought about that ever. What do they look like? I'm always thinking they were brown skin, right? They're out up in this desert, you know? And I'm just like, what did people, what, how did they dress? How was their hair? How was all those things? What did they wear on their feet? What did, you know, Abraham did, you know, because sometimes when I think of biblical times and what maybe a king would look like, right? But at this stage, Abraham was not. So it's like, what did he look like? That's good. I don't know, but I would assume, especially since they lived longer, they probably still look good and healthy, you know?
Yeah, and I asked that question, Jazz, because this is so important. Because I started asking little kids those questions. When you read children's Bibles, what do Adam and Eve look like?
Yeah, they've definitely always been fair skin for sure.
Okay. And I,
And maybe long hair.
yes, I asked that question because that is so important. Our paradigm. When I thought of Hagar and when I thought of Bible characters, I didn't see me. Because from the very beginning, the indoctrination very early on, religion didn't have a place for me. And this is important because for anyone who is brown or maybe Middle Eastern people have more of a sense of seeing themselves, but for so many people outside of the Middle East, who are outside of that area, who had the Bible introduced to them, it sometimes doesn't feel very, the ability to connect to it is hard because it's spoken from a place of we are still foreigners. That only the vision, the visual that is given from very young is it doesn't show me. I couldn't imagine Hagar looking like me. And so in my adult years, and as I have grown in my faith, and I've learned, and I realized, wait, this woman could have looked exactly like me.
Yeah,
And this
true.
was not, you know, when we start talking about she was a slave, maybe some people can envision her that way, but I didn't see her that way. But funny enough, I always envisioned Sarah as white. And really, we're probably talking about two brown women here. And this is really important, because kind of changing the paradigm. Why do I bring that up? Because it's important, because sometimes we have a Western mindset into what we're reading. And I think if we can place ourselves in it and realize, no, this was cultural. It wasn't so much racial as it was cultural. And here you've got this patriarchal culture. You've got these people in this system, and they are Hagar is in a system where she's been given to someone. She is a slave. She is a maid servant, handmaid, whatever you want to call it. And she is mistreated. And for anyone who hasn't read the story of Hagar, Abraham, and Sarah, just for a brief, it is, I'm not going to, for the sake of time, I don't really want to read all of it, but the premise here is that this woman is given to Hagar, to Sarah and Abraham. She leaves with them. God gives Abraham a promise that he's going to have a child, that his descendants will outnumber the stars. And they're old, and they're getting older, and they're getting older, and it's not happening. And Sarah is losing, any confidence in this thing happening. She's getting older. What is this thing God has said? And I can't. It's good to even think through Sarah herself. We give her a bad rap, but she was also in a system. She was in a system where her value depended on having heirs and male sons, and her status, everything. And so this woman was going through a lot. We did a segment on her already, but here's Hagar. And Sarah's like, okay, well, if I can't have this, God's kind of taking too long. So Abraham, go ahead and sleep with her so she can give me a child. Oh my gosh, what a crazy system. I can't even imagine it. This isn't even surrogacy that I am Hagar is volunteering. She doesn't have a choice. She doesn't have a choice. She is in a system that says you belong to me and your children are my property. They belong to me. So many can relate to that in so many ways. And so here you have this woman who is mistreated. She has, she sleeps with this man. And here's the thing. Hagar was probably really young, more than likely. And here you have this old man who this was not, we tend to sugarcoat these things in the Bible and we don't really say it like it is. But this wasn't consensual.
Man.
She didn't agree to this. She didn't have a choice.
This was not in her job description.
This was not, And so here she is having to sleep with this man, be forced, actually. Let's be clear about that. Again, God didn't condone that. That was part of the culture. That is part of the system. You're owned. You don't have a choice. This is what I say you're going to do, and you're going to do it. So here you have this woman who is put in this position. She gets pregnant, has, and is now that she's pregnant, Sarah is ticked. Because now everything she wanted, she's able to see in this young girl. And now she's mad at Abraham. She mad about everything. Like, what on earth? And Hagar, I think to some degree, is probably feeling like, all right, look, I got what you want. I got what you want. But and so Sarah, you're not gonna I am the big dog. She's probably feeling some things. And obviously Sarah's like, yeah, now you gotta go. And this is where we're gonna pick up. I'm actually gonna read it for because I know that, so just so people can be familiar if you don't have your Bible, I will read Genesis 16, 7 through 14, and then you and I can talk through it from here.
Perfect.
So 7, it says, the angel of the Lord found Hagar near a spring in the desert. It was a spring that is beside the road of Shur. And he said, Hagar, servant of Sarai, where do you come from and where are you going? I'm running away from my mistress Sarai, she answered. Then the angel of the Lord told her, go back to your mistress and submit to her. The angel added, I will so increase your descendants that they will be too numerous to count. The angel of the Lord also said to her, you are now a child and you will have a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand against him, and he will live in hostility towards all his brothers. She gave this name to the Lord who spoke to her. You are the God who sees me. For she said, I have now seen the one who sees me. That is why the well was called Beer Lahai Roy. It is still there between Kadesh and Bered. Okay, tons of stuff in here.
It
So let's talk
is.
about this desert encounter. Let's kind of discuss it a bit. She runs away and she is encountered by an angel of the Lord or the Lord at this desert. So here's the thing. What is, he asked her questions, But before he even asks for questions, here's what he says. He says, "Serv Hagar, servant of Sarah, where have you come from and where are you going?"
I never got that, honestly. I'm like, well, you just called her out, God. You know where she's at, right? So you know where she's coming from. But maybe it was a deeper question he was asking. Because I was like, God, you know what's going on. Maybe Hagar don't know, so you're asking her. And then where is she going? She might not have a clue, but she's just trying to get out of there. As far as where she's going, but as running away, like her answer, like I'm just trying to get away from this woman mistreating me, you know. Who knows? She's gonna take it out on my child. We got to go, you know.
Yeah, I love that you said that, Jazz, because that's exactly it to some degree, right? Here is a woman. She is like, yo, where are you going? You're going to the desert. Where, like, are you thinking? Are you, what's gonna happen? You're pregnant. You're go Wait, maybe she was trying to go back to Egypt. Maybe she was trying to go back to what she knew. And I really, as I read this, I think here's a woman. What is happening here is she's going to find and she's going to experience God's love for her. But right now she's running. She's hurting. And isn't that what we do as women? Like when we're in grief, we can't, we're in our lizard brain. We can't process, we can't think. You're just acting. And here is this woman, Hagar, which is doing exactly that in her grief. She's like, I just got to get back to what I know. I am leaving. I don't know where I'm going, but I'm taking my stuff and I'm going with me. And I think so many of us, we run, right? She ran. She ran to
And
escape the pressure.
when I think about the p position she was in, I could feel like, because it's also your fight or flight response, right? So she's like, look, I can't take this anymore. I feel like, the Bible doesn't outright say that she was, kind of taunting and being prideful in front of her. I would think, well, if you are a slave, I kind of feel like, wouldn't you be afraid to do that kind of stuff because of being reprimanded, right, by your owners? So who knows? And maybe she did a little something like that behind the scenes where only she did it in front of only Sarah, who knows? But let's say she has some innocence in it. She could be like, look, y'all told me to do this. Okay, I didn't want to do it. Y'all commanded me. I'm following the orders. Get pregnant. It's not my fault. And then just it's just a lot. So I could feel like it just going through the story, it can make me feel for her. And I'm like, would I would have done the same thing? Or would I've just tried to like obey and just be miserable throughout this whole time and just because this is my lot in life, I'm a slave? Or would I run? I don't know, but I can understand more so of why she would. And I think sometimes as moms too, we might not know how, but we're gonna do something. If we're trying to, I feel like that mom brain kicks in, it's survival mode. I'm just trying to go. So maybe it's Egypt, maybe somebody will pick me up on the way, but it's just that flight response, which, we can't run from our problems translating today, right? I'm not a slave of anyone, but I need to make sure I'm facing what's going on, so.
No, I appreciate you even bringing up the fight flight, right? Because it's the whole fight flight. But some of us, there's a freeze and the fawn. And so, she did. She ran. And I know for me, that's, I'm an emotional runner. And so I can relate to her in that space. I can relate to when things are tough, I run. And when and when whether I run physically or I run emotionally, I'm a runner. And here's this woman who, yeah, she's grieving. She's displaced. She doesn't have what's normal for her, what feels like home. And she finds God finds her in the desert and he says to her, what is he says? First, he says her name. Then he says that she's a servant of Sarai. And then he asks her these questions. And it could be, honestly, when I read this, I think, seriously, God, really? where you're going, where you're heading. But there's this thing about God. He doesn't ask questions because he doesn't know. He asks questions because he wants us to consider and to think. If she's in her lizard brain, he's got to bring her to a place of reason. Like, oh, not even reason, but to think, to stop, take a moment, take, because at this point, think about she is one of the at her lowest point emotionally, maybe. What have I done? She's probably angry. She's probably resentful. She's probably feeling like like you said, I didn't do anything wrong, and look what is happening. This is not fair. She probably on that walk was thinking about that mess in her head over and over and over again, right? And isn't that what we do when we're in our desert?
For sure.
We sit and we think about stuff over and over. We ruminate on
Yes.
it.
Oh, yes.
And there's a story we tell ourselves. Like, I wonder what story she was telling herself, right? There's this, have you ever heard of this thing called narrative psychology?
No.
Okay, it's really cool. It's a perspective in psychology where basically it talks about the stories that we tell ourselves, how we tell our stories. And based so it kind of like we tell the stories the way we deal with experiences. So we can come from it very negative, right? If you ever met someone who's super negative, they, oh, my family was the worst. I'm the black sheep. I've always been the one who's, or you know what? My family had challenges and I was definitely one who stood up for myself. And they come from a place of strength while others come from a place of weakness. So we can do that, right? We can tell these stories. And I'm thinking, I think God wanted Hagar to really recognize what story she was telling herself. That's just conjecture on my part, obviously. But as I'm relating it to me, like, Hagar, where are you going? Where are you coming from? Like, what story is going on here? Because he was about to rewrite her story. He was about to give her a new one. And I just
And
think
it's hard to hear from
yeah.
the. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
No, go for it. Go for it.
It's also hard sometimes, like, to accept, right, when the Bible tells us hard things, right? Hard truths, hard things to do. And so to hear, like, him saying, go back and be a slave, I'm like, oh, why? Why? How come she can't? Let her just can she have this baby and then just leave? Can they get somebody? I don't know. So I was thinking, like, man, can Hagar just have this baby and then send the baby? Like, is there some type of other way this can happen? Because, I definitely feel for her, but it can be hard to hear that. To go back, do I have to go back to this lifestyle, or can anything be changed? Is that all you got for me, Angel? Can you, is there something else? It wasn't.
Yeah, no, that's so true. And I really appreciate you bringing that up. And I think even for us, as we are thinking through this woman, her experience, her challenge, her story, and her running, I get it. I relate. And I think what you brought up about going back, wait, what? What are you talking about? Did you not realize that I was being mistreated? Did you not realize that I had to sleep with this person to have their child? And I don't, it's not even my inheritance. Do you not realize what I've been through? Wait, are you serious? And I think in our Christian lives, we can go through that, right? There are stories we tell ourselves. And I think one of the questions that I'd love to have our audience even think through is, and we'll discuss it ourselves, is what story are you telling yourself right now in your current situation? Because that Hagar is an example of getting through that story and responding to God, where sometimes the stories we tell ourselves, it makes it really hard to respond to God because it's so countercultural or counter it counters our feelings and our emotions. And I think some of the things that in this story is really important with Hagar is there were facts, right? Here's the facts, Hagar. You are a slave. You are Sarai's slave. You are Abraham's slave. And not slavery as we know in America. America, we knew chattel slavery. You were owned, you were property. You had, you didn't have a way of buying yourself out. You didn't have a way of getting out. Your child wasn't going to be taken as someone else's child. They would be taken as a slave. So, it's a different kind of slavery. But the emotions and the feelings that you experience are similar because you do not have self, you don't have self agency. It's been taken from you. And so she has zero rights, zero. She's running. She's running against, she's running. It's against the law. Honestly, her running away is against the law. And so she's putting herself in a position where she can be punished severely or killed, whatever it is they deem necessary. And this is happening all under the hand of, it is all under God watching, right? And he tells her to go back. So it could feel like, what the heck? These are the facts. What is going on here? I've been driven to the desert because of all of this, and you find me here. But there's something God does that's really remarkable when he finds her in the desert, as we've been talking about before, is he makes space for her. When he asks her the questions, he's making space for her to go from lizard brain to, oh, wow, someone wants to know why. And she does answer. She says, when he says, where have you come from and where are you going? She said, I am fleeing from my mistress, Sarai. And so what question is God? What do you feel like stories you're saying to yourself right now? What questions do you hear from God right now?
I wanted to add too, Sam, is that kind of based on your filter that you have. I love that you talk about, how we retell our stories, right? If we were to retell a situation, how will we retell it? And so I feel like for the longest time, and even now I still have to fight it, but it's so easy. And I'm sure for the brain itself, it is so easy, but just also because of how I was raised to always see the danger, and I'm sure that was more of a for protection wise, but it's always see the danger, always see the bad stuff, so you know how to act, so you know how to move accordingly. And so then that's how I would go through life. How do you know? And I could retell my situations. Well, this didn't happen right, and that didn't happen, and I should have done this, but then this happened, and that sucked. And then just, can kind of go and retell the story without seeing the blessings, even the blessings in the hard times. Seeing the silver lining, seeing the, like there is still something in the midst of your trauma, your distress, your whatever that you can hang on to. But so it really does, it is really, I don't know, just another reminder for me as I'm going through life and whatever hardships that I could do, like as of right now, looking for a job, it's easy for me, especially knowing how long it's been. It can feel like, oh, I shouldn't have left my job when I did. I should have just stayed till I got another job or whatever, right? I made a big mistake. I made regrets, whatever, but knowing my reason to. I need to take a break. I wanted to seek for other opportunities as well that I really wanted to go after. And that it's a blessing that I'm able to leave a job without having one lined up because our bills are okay, right? Like instead of going through that, it can just feel like, oh my gosh, woe is me. I can't find anything that I want. Maybe I'm not good at this. I should change professions, all these things, right? But how I would tell my story.
Yeah, I think that's so important to consider, right? Looking at the what you just did, you talk through the facts of your story. You said, hey, I'm able to leave my job. These are the facts, while not having another one lined up and it not being a financial detriment, it's not detrimental to my family. That's the facts. But if when we don't face the facts, it can be very easy to come across very victim, like a victim.
For sure.
And I think it's so important when you look at Hagar's story and we read about her story, I think God gave her the opportunity to look at some facts. And the facts weren't, they were kind of grim. Her facts weren't like yours. Yours was her facts were still grim. But what was the alternative? She was going to die in the desert. She was.
That's true.
She if she continued, where was the water? How far was
Right. It's
Egypt?
very
Did you think
true.
through those things, Hagar? You know, you're a woman alone in the desert. What if you come upon people who would harm you? You're vulnerable. So in a lot of ways, they're thinking through that it could be like, man, this is the worst situation ever, but the situation you're bringing yourself into is even worse. It is you're and so I think sometimes in our stories, if we don't face facts, and sometimes the facts, yes, they're grim, but the alternative can be worse. You know, and so important when we're telling our stories to go from survival and flight to taking the time to stop. And I think this is what God did is he wasn't when he asked for the questions, he wasn't launching an investigation or an interrogation. Really, he was intervening. He was staging an intervention. Hagar, you if you go further, you're not going to make it. You're going to die. And I have a story for you. I have a better story for you. I've got something to rewrite. It may not seem like there's any good that's going to come out of it, but I've got something better for you. I am going to rewrite this. And I think what's interesting is he, when he says to her, go back to and submit to your mistress, go submit to her, he didn't take her out of her situation. He wasn't taking her out of her situation. And I think sometimes in our story, when we tell our stories, the what we want, the ending we want is happily ever after, the way I want it, the way I desire it. If you don't completely take me out of this situation, you're not for me. If you
That's
don't
very true.
part this Red Sea, then I don't want it. But God didn't, he didn't take her out of her situation. He said, go back. Go back to the mistreatment. Like, go back to it. And I just sometimes I can't fathom that. How did she feel when she heard that? How do we feel when we feel stuck? Like, wait, if I go forward, I may die. If I go back, they may kill me. So in that moment, there's that entrusting herself to God.
And I love that God gave, God came to her and provided the space, right? To let's talk this out, girl. And helping us to think. And I love when God sends people our way to do that. When we're going through these times and we're running, and it's like just a warm hug, right? Because I'm sure nobody's asking her how she's doing, right? And she's pregnant, like, she's working, she's doing her job. So, giving her that space, maybe not, but to know that God is, I'm going to provide the space. Let's talk this out. And I do appreciate what you said. I feel like it's like a hard teaching, like when the disciples say, "Who can this, what is this new teaching?" Or like, "This is so hard," of you're still going to be in your situation. And I think sometimes people trying to pursue a relationship with God, we think that if God is working, then that means it's the absence of these struggles. If God is intervening, it's the absence of these hardships and challenges, when sometimes you're going to be in that same situation, but how will you think about it? How will you respond? You can only control you and not other people. And that we can't play God, because sometimes it's like, well, why would God allow this to happen? I feel like sometimes as humans, it's like we want God to intervene when we think it's appropriate, but then not in others. So it's kind of like, God isn't our genie, but to know that this was a situation, this is the culture, and we're gonna make it through. And like how you said, God reassuring her that there is a plan for you, and even telling her, right? You know, telling her, giving her a little maybe give her some hope, right, to get back. And so, yeah.
And if you read and really take the time to look at this, God was sending her back because remember, he had a blessing on Abraham's house. He had blessed he blessed that house. So technically, Hagar was under that blessing. And even if she would be covered by God's blessing in that house, in that place, where she was going to, she was walking away from that blessing. And it resonates with what you said. We could feel like it's doom and horrible and not the way we want, and we miss that there's a blessing there protecting us, even when it feels like this stinks, this is horrible, I want it different. His hand was on the household. In fact, her daily meat, Hagar, you were eating, you were drinking, you were sleeping. You had everything you need. You're not going to get that where you're going to starve out here. You may be eaten by wild animals out here. You may be mauled and, you may be attacked out here. You have basic needs there. And that can feel like, well, I don't want basic needs. I want extra needs. I want more. But you had the blessing of that there. And I just think in that time, and you said it, God really shows Hagar how she's going to share in that blessing. Because she was able to say, wow, I am seen. I'm not invisible. He knew her name when she was there. I mean, he called her Hagar. And then he said, servant of Sarai. He knew her. So she's like, he saw her at her worst point, met her at her worst point, and then even gave her, like you were saying, gave her that little sum. He says to her, I will increase your descendants so much that they will be too numerous to count. Okay, here's the kicker. That is the exact same promise he gave to Abraham. He gave it to Hagar too. And we miss that sometimes. We miss that. He gave her the same blessing. This was Abraham's blessing. This was the covenant God made with Abraham a chapter before. And so he gave that to her and he validated her. He rewrote her story. The story she would tell isn't, I'm this unseen, not valuable, no self-agency, zero rights, zero, I had a child and, was mistreated. That's not the story. He rewrote her story. I have seen the one who sees me. I have been given a promise. My descendants will outnumber stars. Two, that blessing is for me too. And I am blown away by God's grace here. I'm blown away by just what he did for Hagar in that desert. It still blows my mind. And it's not something when, in the beginning you said, well, we don't really talk about Hagar that much. Yeah, we talk about Abraham's promise all the time. We talk about that covenant that he had with God all the time. But we don't talk about that God said to Hagar, I will increase your descendants so much that it will be too numerous to count. She too had a promise. And that is blow away for me. And so I just think this is what God does for us when we trust him, when we stay faithful, and when we commit to his word. Especially when life gets difficult, especially when life gets difficult. He rewrites our story. He opens our eyes to see that we can get through this. I think, how did my ancestors do this? How were they able to hold faith in a time when they were not regarded even as human? and they got a little bit of God and they held on so much. Who am I in my day and age to have so many more of the blessings that they only wish they could have, to condemn God because of how someone may see me or how someone may treat me or how, you know? So this goes so much beyond being a woman, being a woman of color, being a foreigner, being an immigrant, like all of those things I resonate with. And sometimes based on how I'm treated because of those things, whether in the church or in the world, I can be quick to want to blame God and be the victim and forget, wait, my boundary lines have fallen in pleasant places. Do I trust God? Can I respond to God? Like this woman responded to God and went back to her mistreatment. She was, you know, so it just, this is, there's so much more to this story, but I think that's one of the things that really, sticks out for me.
Something I wanted to share too is this is probably more so on Sarah than Hagar, but it makes me think of what is it in Galatians, right? How we reap what we sow. And sometimes I'm like, now, Sarah girl, I'm sure it was hard. I am sure, right? It's like hope deferred makes the heart sick. I get it. You know, and so I could just think now, you're over here mistreating this woman after what you told her to do. Sometimes I'm just like, oh, I know that's what we can do too, right? As humans, as women, we get mad for the decision we made. Like we made our bed, so you gotta lay in it. Like this is your decisions. Here's the consequences of this, and now you don't like it. And it makes me think just for women, I mean men too, but just think about what you're gonna do before you do it. You know, think about what you're gonna say before you say it. Like be cautious, be careful, think through things. I feel like generally speaking, but sometimes it just makes me laugh because I'm like, I can relate in a general way. You know, I have not been in that situation like Sarah, but just like pause, take a beat. Things are getting frustrating for you. You're like, look, I'm running out of time. You know, everybody around me is probably having all these children, popping out all these boys, you know? Like, when is it going to be my time? And so it's like, now look what you did, and now you're mad. And it's like, girl, that's your fault. That's your fault that you're over here hating on Hagar. And it's not, and who knows, what if Hagar ended up not being able to conceive? You like you don't know, like you don't know until you try. But she was able to, you know, but you don't know what that story could have been like for her. But I love how God, even if it wasn't supposed to be that way, I use that because who knows, God wills things, right, for the greater good. And that's something that is encouraging to me in my life. If you know, I'm sure, for example, God probably intended for my mother and my father to be together and to be married and to grow up in a two-parent household and to get that love and training and discipline, right? That's not my story, right? But how do you will that around so I can learn the things I need to learn to be ready for life? You know, so it's just like it might not look the way we want it to look, or even maybe how God said. You know, but God wills it around in that He still gets the glory and that He will provide a way for us to work through things, even if we, you know, we make decisions that we're like, no, that probably wasn't the best decision. So that just encourages me to see, even through what Sarah did, how that affected Hagar and how that, you know, just turned the situation in a different way.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jazz, to show that just because something has occurred or we've been treated badly doesn't mean God can't use the will things to get us to a good place, back to the blessings, and to bless us and change our story. I think that's so good. And even as you brought that up, this is something as women we really need to consider, because Sarah actually did to Hagar what Abraham did to her.
Say
When
more,
they went
Sam.
to Egypt, Abraham told Sarah, because he didn't want to be killed, he didn't want to be threatened by Pharaoh. He didn't want to lose his life. Because she was so beautiful, he said, "Tell them you're my sister." And he actually gave her to the Pharaoh. So she would have been in his harem. Sarah would have been in his harem. And God saved Sarah. God saved Sarah. So Sarah turns around, and that's probably how they got Hagar as a gift as they were leaving, right? Sarah, girl,
Makes sense.
this is what your husband, your Abraham, did to you. He gave you to someone else, and God saved you. And you're going to turn around? Yes, culturally, it is appropriate because she belongs to you. She's your maidservant. But there's a way culturally to do that without all the mess you did to that woman. You did to her what was done to you. How do we not? And I think as women, we can lose that ability to commiserate with each other in a healthy way, to empathize with each other, not commiserate, but to empathize actually with each other in a way where we can be tougher. We can overlook, like, our pain is more than someone else's. Our needs are greater than someone else's. And it's just so important for us to realize as women, we need to sit with each other and empathize with each other and put ourselves in each other's shoes. Because had Sarah done this, we may have had a different story as well, right? We were still gonna have Isaac, or that the son who was gonna multiply the stars. God would have made it happen somehow, some way. He would have willed something, because that's what he does. But all that hurt and pain and disaster and just all these
It's
things that
messy.
come with it, it's messy. It don't have to be so messy, but it is. And we experience this as women. There's just a mess. It's like if we would only see each other culturally and help each other and meet each other, go, my needs, my wants are similar to her needs, her wants, because we're women. If we would come together in that space under the umbrella of God's grace, we can be a stronger church. We can be a stronger community. So much really comes back to if we can just see each other through the lens of Christ, it makes a difference. That actually supersedes me seeing someone as a white person or them seeing me as a black person. Or if we are first able to see each other, that's God's daughter. Primarily, that's God's daughter. It makes a huge difference. And so I just think it's so important for us to remember God is in control, and God is the one who writes our story. And if we can just hold on to him, if we can just view each other through that lens, if we can just remember that he hears us. He hears us, which is what he says to her, right? When he tells her to name their child, her child. He says, in verse 11, "You are now pregnant and you will give birth to a son, and you shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery." That's what Ishmael means. The Lord hears you. So I think I love how God does this. He does these things where you're like, whoa, wait, did God just, he gave her a name that anytime she calls her child, imagine, go, Ishmael, Ishmael, come here, Ishmael, do this, Ishmael, do that. Well, really what's happening here is God, in that moment, she's remembering, oh, God hears me. Ishmael, God hears me. Ishmael, God hears Ishmael, take out the water. God helps me. Ishmael, go to the well. God hears me. And I love how God does that. He is omnipresent, right? He says, name him this because I hear you. I have heard your misery. And How amazing is that? That that woman
Yeah.
could, God reminded her of his presence every day.
Right. It's really beautiful. Yeah.
Yes, every day. And I just, he's so intentional. It's kind of what Acts 17 talks about, how the time and place, like God, he sets the times and place where we should live. Nothing is happenstance or coincidental. And
Yeah.
Hagar was meant to be in that family. What happened was not his will, but like you said, he will better, you know. And
Amen.
I think, look at this woman who's able to hear God's, she's able to see God's faithfulness every day when she looks at her child, when she calls
Right.
his name. It's a message she couldn't get away from, you know.
Right.
And but
Right.
for us in our day and age, the message that we cannot get away from is the cross of Christ. You know, one of the things when he tells us to take communion, every time we do, we
Yeah.
remember in remembrance. So just like she had that constant reminder when she said, you know, Ishmael's name, we have that constant reminder when we as Christians take time to commune with God, when we take the time to have our communion with him, when we say the name of Jesus Christ,
Yeah.
it's that reminder that, wait, he's with us. He changed our,
Yeah.
he can change our
Amen.
story. He can change our story. Like he's our saving grace. He gives us opportunity to see different, to think different, to view life and situations, and to retell our stories from a place of strength and not a place of weakness. To retell our
Yeah.
stories from the, I am seen by God. So I just really appreciate that. I just really appreciate the God sees me. You are the
Yeah.
God who sees me. And I think
Yeah.
as we kind of pull it together, it's leaving our audience with remembering God sees you. You
Period.
may not, period. Period.
With the T.
Right? He
Yeah.
sees you when you feel invisible. He sees you. And I love that. I don't know. Many times we can walk into a space or we can walk into a room and we can just feel invisible. Or we can
Yeah.
go through situations and not feel like there's someone to really, you know,
Man.
that maybe people don't see us, they see what we can do. They see what we can give. And I felt that so many times, you know, like I'm a tool. I
Yeah.
don't, not a tool in that sense, but I'm transactional. Relationships are so transactional. It's what I can do for someone, how I can meet a need for someone, and can
Yeah.
feel very overlooked. But God's like, no, you're not overlooked. I see you.
Yeah.
You know, this, I think Hagar fled and God found her. He saw her face. He loved her. He reached out to her in her darkest moments. And I don't
Right.
quite know what our audience is going through at this time, but I think this woman's story is a powerful reminder that no matter where we are in our grief journey, God is always, he's always looking at us with compassion. He is always seeking to get close to us. His grace is so sufficient. And but I think you said it earlier, there is no tidy meat, everything in a bow for Hagar. It's not like, oh, and happily ever after, like Cinderella and Beauty and the Beast. And there is no happily ever after here. She gets to go back to her messy situation. She gets to give birth and then have more angst, more issues, and get sent away again, by the way. She does get eventually sent away again, but she has the promise now. She has a promise that God has given to her. She's different. She's walking around with different energy. Her energy is different. She got big energy, but it's a big energy that comes from a being seen by God, you know, knowing that there's more purpose So I
Right.
really appreciate the story. I really appreciate just the lesson of resilience and faith that we're able to glean here from Hagar. And I don't know what, again, our audience is going through, but I pray that you can go back and you can look at Hagar and you can see her differently. You can add legs to her story. She's not just a blip in the page. She's just not the handmaid servant. She's not the one Abraham slept with and then, had Ishmael. And she's not just that. She's so much more, and she's so relatable to many of us who've been victimized, who are foreigners, who feel invisible, who are going through a particularly grievous time in our faith and feeling like God has forgotten us and doesn't see us. Hagar tells us something different. And I am so grateful for that story.
And I too want to encourage those listening too to have just scriptures that you can have that can put a little pep in your step, that can encourage you. I'm so glad you brought up the point of, now Hagar probably looked at her situation differently. She knows it's promised. She knows that she's seen. She knows that God is with her and God cares. And I think when you walk that way, you do walk differently. You do talk differently. You do see life a little differently, right? Your situation might not have changed, but how you approach it, how you deal with it, how you think about it, what you will do about it, could change. So I just like that. It makes me think, man, what's a scripture that I can hold on to that now I can see my situation or just, I can see that differently and knowing that God is with us.
Yes. So I hope this episode was super helpful for you. I do love stories that God allows in the Bible, and especially when they're not stories that are neat and tidy and easily explained, but that bring about even more wrestling and questions. And so it's really a great thing to dig deeper. So as you study out Hagar a bit more today, if you have any questions or thoughts about Hagar, please feel free to put it in our podcast on, what is that website again?
It is www.unpresentablepartspod.com. Yes,
Wonderful.
please
And
leave us
so please leave
comments.
us, yes.
Yes, comments, questions, anything you would like to add, things you would like to see next. But we do have some things coming up next before we go. Can you let them know, Sam?
Yep, next week, next, not next week, but next Unpresentable Parts Eve edition, the next time you get to listen to us again, we will be talking about Tamar. And I am really excited about this one. It's Tamar, Judah's wife. And well, Judah's daughter-in-law and on and on. Well, listen, you'll understand why I said that. But I am excited because that story is even messier than Hagar's. And I love that God has put in the Bible, but just really being able to see her righteousness in big mess. So excited to have been with you guys today. Look forward to our next time when we take on Tamar.
Awesome. Have a good one, guys.
Bye, guys. Have a good one.